thank you for joining us on The Skeptic Sidekick, where we delve into ancient societies, the ghosts, the paranormal, UFOs, all looking at it from the perspective of the true believer and from the skeptic perspective. Joining me, my partner, my co-host, my sibling, Kimber Rodriguez. Myself, I am Richard Gregg. And again, let's look into being the skeptic psychic. Hello, and thank you for coming once again. And like I said, this is from the future, the future, the future, which will probably be the past later on. But my name is Richard Gregg, and with me is my wonderful, talented, exciting, breathtaking, smart, funny, wonderful lady that I like to call my favorite sibling, Kimber Rodriguez. And welcome again to the Skeptic Psychic. Kimber, how are you doing today?
I'm doing good, but you know, calling me your sibling makes it sound like I'm gender neutral, right?
Well, I can't say you're my favorite sister because you're my only sister, and I have four brothers. So what should I call you?
Say your favorite sibling, your sister Kimbra.
I thought that's exactly what I said, but that's okay. So.
Yes. I am doing good. It's been a great week.
It's been a great week?
Yes, it has been a wonderful week. Nothing too exciting has happened this week that I can think of. Anything on your end?
Well, let's just say that one of my favorite people in the world celebrated their birthday this week, and I was proud to call them up and wish them a very happy, wonderful, joyous birthday that they really appreciated, and I brought a little joy to their life.
Oh, my husband?
Yes!
Yes, yesterday was my husband's birthday. We celebrated at work. We had a little party and cake and ice cream, and then we went out to dinner with his family and had more cake, and we had a great time.
Yes. Also, I'd like to give another shout out to a gentleman by the name of Jim Gregg, wishing him a very happy 53rd birthday. Wherever you are, we love you, Jim Gregg.
Yes. Happy birthday,
Jim Gregg.
Yes. That's been noted.
Right. Did we mention the fact that it was Jim Gregg's birthday yesterday?
For all of you who are curious who Jim Gregg is, that is our elder brother. His birthday was yesterday as well. And so we just want to send out a very happy birthday to him and let him know that he's loved and appreciated.
Right. And of next week, we have to celebrate another milestone, the 27th anniversary. Wait, I have to figure that the math out, but you'll be surprised when we do our next podcast.
Yes.
And also, today is also my anniversary. I've been married to a wonderful, beautiful, highly intelligent companion for the rest of my life, as well as through eternity, my wife, Shauna.
Happy anniversary, Rick and Shauna. I hope y'all have a wonderful life together.
Yes. But other than that,
make sure y'all stop by our Facebook group and wish them a happy anniversary.
Anyway, so now, let's talk about one of the early investigators and our great, wonderful Hall of Famers. I'm talking about the husband and wife duo, Ed and Lorraine Warren. What can you tell me about Mr. and Mrs. Warren?
Well, let me see here. They were paranormal investigators and authors who were associated with some very high-profile alleged haunting cases. They had several movies made out of their cases. Some of the noted were Haunting of Connecticut, Amityville Horror, and The Conjuring.
Now, according to the New England Society for Psychic Research, Edward Warren Minnie was born in Bridgeport, Connecticut in 1926. And a year later, his eternal companion, which I feel like they're in heaven together, Lorraine Rita Moran, was born in the same city. the couple were married in 1945, right after Ed came out of the Navy in World War II.
A little bit about their backstory. When Ed was 5, he claimed to have seen an apparition of the family's landlady who had died the year before in his home. And in his book, in the book, The Demonologist, The Extraordinary Career of Ed and Lorraine Warren, he recalled that she was semi-transparent, wearing what looked like some sort of a shroud, and then vanished. After that, he started having dreams of relatives he had never met. One of these was an aunt who would send him messages about his future and told him he would help many priests, but he would not become a priest. Now for Lorraine, she discovered her abilities when she was a child. She began having unusual experiences, but she just assumed everyone else had those same abilities. When she was 12, however, on Arbor Day, she says that her classmates had planted a sapling, and as soon as they put the sapling in the ground, she saw the tree fully grown, filled with leaves and blowing in the wind. When a nun asked her why she was staring at the sky, she told her she was just looking up into the tree. She asked if she was seeing the future, and she admitted that she was. They began dating in 1944 when they were both 16. Ed was an usher at the movie theater that Lorraine went to frequently. And soon after they started dating is when he went off to fight World War II. As you had mentioned, in 1945, Ed came back due to a sunken ship and the two of them married. The ship went down in the North Atlantic Sea. After they got married, he did return to war. They did later have a daughter named Judy. After the war, the Warrens had to figure out how to make a living. So since both of them had skills as drawing landscapes, they decided that that would be their life's work. However, they didn't want to paint regular landscapes, so they decided to do haunted houses that Ed found in the newspaper. They'd go into these houses and sketch them, and then knock on the door and offer the sketch for information about the haunting. If the story was compelling enough, they would actually paint the house and sell it later as the artwork. It was about 5 years that they went around the United States painting, investigating haunted houses. Despite the fact that Lorraine did have experience as a child, she was initially a skeptic. She was a bit weary of the people that she spoke to and thought that they had either an overactive imagination or were just making things up. However, she soon noticed similarities between the experiences, including people who had never met each other telling the same story. So that made her become a believer. And in 1952, they founded the New England Society for Psychic Research to document their cases, and also created the Occult Museum, which we'll discuss later. Would you like to tell us some about their time with the Society for Psychic Research and some of the cases that they've did?
Sure. Be more than happy to. Let's talk about the Schmerl haunting. Basically, in 1974, Jack and Janet Schmerl moved in a house on Chase Street, West Princeton, Pennsylvania. Strange currents followed, leading the Schmerls to believe there was a demon. The demon had slammed their German Shepherd into the wall, bit Jack's ear, and pushed one of their daughters down a flight of stairs. Both Jack and Janet were said to be sexually assaulted by the demon. In 1986, they contacted Ed and Lorraine, who confirmed their house was indeed haunted. And Ed would go on to say that he witnessed a dark mass form inside the house, and the demon had left a message telling him to get out.
Now, if I remember correctly, there was a TV movie made about this either in the late 80s or the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
That I found really, really chilling and pretty interesting to watch. There was a lot of weird things that went on in that house. What are your thoughts on that case?
Very dark, very scary, very demonic. Now, also with this, in 77, single mother Peggy Hodgson called the police in her home in Enville, England, telling them that she had witnessed furniture moving and her two of her four children had heard knocking from inside the walls. In the next 18 months, more than 30 people, including neighbors, psychic researchers, journalists say they witnessed heavy furniture moving in and out of their own accord. and objects being thrown about the room. Two of the children, Janet and Margaret, were photographed levitating 7 feet off the ground. And Ed and Lorraine were contacted in 78, and they did conclude that demonic presence was in the house. So all the party people in the house, demons.
They just wanted to have fun.
Yeah.
One of the things that kind of baffles me is that from all the stories that I've read and all the encounters that I've read, it's always demons. And from talking with other people, they say that demonic hauntings are very rare. So I'm just wondering how the Warrens came across so many of them in their life and in their investigations. What are your thoughts?
Basically, I'm looking at the fact that what you search for, 9 times out of 10, you will find.
So do you believe that these were actual demonic hauntings, or do you think they were spirits that the Warrens were just saying, oh, there's a demon here, and it may have just been Uncle Bob down the street?
No, I believe they were possibly demons. For example, Annabelle the doll. Annabelle, not to be confused with the movie version, was a Raggedy Ann doll. She was originally gifted to a young nurse named Donna by her mother. When she took it back to her apartment, her roommate Angie and her noticed that it would often change positions whenever they walked by Annabelle. They would occasionally find notes scattered across the apartment reading, "Help me!" in a child's handwriting. Angie's boyfriend, Lou, claims that he woke up one night totally frozen and watched as Annabelle crawled up his body, attempting to strangle him. Distressed, the roommates reached out to a medium who told him that the doll was possessed by the spirit of a 7-year-old girl by the name of Annabelle Higgins. The medium answered that the spirit was ultimately benevolent, but Ed and Lorraine had a different opinion.
Ed and Lorraine.
They determined demonic presence had inhabited the doll. They performed a blessing inside the house before taking Annabelle, the Raggedy Ann doll, off the woman's hands. Now, I remember hearing a story. A reporter had come in to actually interview Ed and Lorraine, and she was sitting down in their study, and she heard a voice saying, "Help me, please." And she's like, "What's going on?" And she looked up at the doll, and just about ready to reach up and open up the case, the head turned and looked at her, which kind of freaked her out.
So how is it that the medium got that she was a child and Ed and Lorraine got that it was a demon?
Hopefully on a future episode, when we do talk about haunted dolls, we do go back and look back a little closely on Annabelle, because we're also talking about how many 7-year-old children know how to possess a doll.
Okay. So one of the ones I don't see here was the one that you talked about, was the case of the mirror. But I think you kind of went into good detail on that one in the last episode where you discussed Bloody Mary. So how about the South End werewolf? That's an interesting story.
Basically, the gentleman who believed he was a werewolf?
Yes.
Basically, a gentleman from Essex, England, ordinary carpenter named William Ramsey, claimed to be possessed by a demon that compelled him to take the form of a werewolf. Ramsey, according to sources, experienced his first transformation at the age of 9. As he describes it, he was playing outside when an icy cold breeze followed by an awful stench, before he flew into a rage, uprooting a fence post with the fence still attached, gnawing at the wire mesh. Ramsey himself would not have another experience until he reached his adulthood. Been reported he would fly into fits of rage, during which he would display inhuman strength, baring his teeth and growling while curling his hands like claw. When the Warrens caught wind of this in 89, they convinced Mr. Ramsey to come to church in Connecticut, their hometown, and undergo an exorcism with their specialist, Bishop Robert McKenna. Now, that guy could have been schizophrenic, but they did say after his exorcism, he became normal.
So he didn't actually turn into a werewolf. He just started acting.
He believed he did.
Okay, but he didn't like transform, like grow hair and long teeth and claws and all of that. He just started acting out as a wolf would or a werewolf. Is that correct?
Yes.
My coworker asked a very interesting question today, and I shall repeat that to you and as well as our listeners to get y'all's opinions on. His question was, can a person be both schizophrenic and possessed at the same time? Or is it just one or the other? What are your thoughts?
I believe that schizophrenia is actually a normal thing. You know, I'm not saying it's all psychic or ghosty or something like that. However, on the same flip of the coin, you can be possessed or be mediumship, that sort of thing, and still not be schizophrenic. A schizophrenic could be saying, oh, you've been demon-possessed. At the same time, you could say someone that was demon-possessed saying, oh, you're just schizophrenic. Here, let me shove a couple of pills down your throat and we'll discuss it.
But do you think that being schizophrenic opens your mind up to the possibility of these things occurring?
I don't think that it could open up your mind to those type of things. I think there's a brain chemical going on inside your brain. Taking prescribed medication or actually talking to somebody helps with the schizophrenic. While being possessed, that does not help a person that's been possessed.
I'd love to know what our listeners think of this. If you'd like to send us an email or comment on our website, what your thoughts are, if you think that schizophrenia and possession can go hand in hand, or if you think they're two separate things, let us know. Now, what about their most famous case?
It depends on what you believe their most famous case is, because some people say it was Amityville. Some people say it was the Conjuring House. It's your perspective.
This is true. Let's talk about the Conjuring House, since it's one of the ones that is very popular right now with the movie. We could talk about that as well as the story of The Devil Made Me Do It. We can go through both of those if you want.
Okay.
Okay, the true story of The Conjuring, which the first film is based on, focuses on the Perrin family. And in 71, this family moved into a 14-room farmhouse in Harrisfield, Rhode Island, which is on sale right now if anybody's interested. You've got $1 million to spend. And it was inhabited by Carolyn, Roger, and their 5 daughters. And they began to notice strange things happening almost immediately after they moved in. It did start small, such as Carolyn would notice that the broom went missing or seemed to move from place to place. She would also hear sounds of something scraping against a kettle in the kitchen when no one was there. She'd also find piles of dirt in a newly cleaned kitchen. The girls began to notice spirits around the house, and for the most part, they were harmless. There were a few, however, that were angry. Karen allegedly researched the home and discovered it had been in the same family for 18 generations. Many of them did die under mysterious circumstances. The spirit that was depicted in the film Bathsheba was one that Ed and Lorraine picked up when they went to the house. According to Ed and Lorraine, she was a witch who had killed her child and then hung herself in the tree outside. However, the true story about Sheba is she was just a woman who lived close by, who actually died at an old age, surrounded by family and friends. So there is a little discrepancy there. But supposedly, whatever was there did take hold of Carolyn. It wasn't as severe as it was in the movie. However, they did try to do an exorcism, but it was cut short by the husband. Andrea, one of the daughters, claims to have secretly witnessed a seance they did. She said her mother began to speak in languages not of this world, and her chair levitated, and then she was thrown across the room. So that's just a little bit about the true Conjuring story. A lot of it was dramatized from the movie. However, there was an episode of Kindred Spirits. If anybody knows that show with Amy Bruni and Adam Brody, shout out to them. Love you guys. They actually went to the Conjuring House a couple of years ago upon the request of the new owners to do an investigation. And they came back with some pretty cool evidence that it is still haunted. And the cool thing about it was almost the entire family returned to the house to talk about their experiences. The only one who was not there was the mother, because she has sworn that she will never step foot in that house again. And to this day, she has kept that promise. So that's just some interesting information about the true story behind The Conjuring. Would you like to tell us a little bit more about the true story of The Devil Made Me Do It, since that's their latest movie?
Sure, not a problem. I did find that wonderful article about Ed, Lorraine, and that wizard's mirror.
Oh, okay. You want to tell us about that first before we discuss The Devil Made Me Do It?
Sure. It's an ornate mirror bought by a gentleman by the name of Stephen Zillner, who used it in a practice that is little well known today, but it's called spectraculum, or mirror magic. Magic can be used for good or evil, just like witchcraft, that sort of thing. However, he used it as in ritual black magics, doing lengthy incantations, rituals, or conjuring formulas, staring at the mirror pretty much all day, repeating mantras, that sort of thing. Pretty soon, he began to see things that may happen in a week, a month, day by day. The more he opened up his free will to the experience, the more he saw. Pretty soon, Mr. Zellner decided to take it one step forward. He could just picture a person that he was angry with, and boom, they'd be in the mirror. He'd send out creatures from the mirror to cause them to have accidents, like falling down the stairs, breaking their arms, you know, just basically everything. However, as with all magic, the more you do, the more it affects you. He began to have his own problems. The demons he had actually suppressed into the environment began to inhabit his house and engage in oppressing him. Say, like disembodied spirits, footsteps, heavy breathing, doors opened by themselves, objects levitate or flung across the room by unseen hands. Unearthly noises awoke him in the middle of the night. Almost in about a week, he called up a prominent Catholic official and begged him to send a demonologist to his house. Catholic Church wanted Ed to check things out and make sure what was going on. So when he arrived, man was frightened out of his wits. He had every right to be. Doors, of course, were opening, closing, flying objects here, there, and everywhere. Every minute, something would crash and break or bounce off the wall, hit the floor. So, in a situation like this, the best solution is to stab the devil with his own pitchfork, so to speak, according to Ed. Ed began reversing all the rituals that Stephen had performed throughout the house. Within the afternoon, Mr. Zellner begged Ed to take the mirror out of the house. So right now it does sit inside Ed and Lorraine's Museum of Cursed Items, at which it stands, despite the fact of Ed and Lorraine's death.
Interesting. A little bit about the true story of The Devil Made Me Do It. The story goes that Arnie Johnson and his girlfriend Debbie Glatzel were going to move into this new home. And supposedly when they were moving things in, her little brother, who was helping out, went into a room and saw this, I'm not sure if it was a bed or a mattress there. However, he got a bad vibe from it, and he saw a vision of a man before him. Freaked out, he ran out, and his parents were like, come on, you need to help us. And he didn't want to go back in there. His parents thought he was being lazy. However, after this, he started acting very strangely. Ed and Lorraine were called in, who claimed that the boy was possessed. As they were doing the seance, Arnie stepped forward and pretty much told them to leave the child alone and to take him instead. Now, after this happened and they were moved into their home, Arnie got into an argument with their landlord, who was named Alan Bono. Basically, Bono was drunk at this time and was being belligerent, so an argument ensued, wherein Johnson stabbed him, killing him. The Warrens claimed that the reason he committed this crime was because he was then possessed by the demons who left the young brother David. They tried to use this evidence in court. Actually, in the movie, from what I hear, the evidence is taken into account, whereas in real life, it was dismissed. They would not allow them to use the evidence. So he was convicted of first-degree manslaughter and sentenced to 10 to 20 years in prison. While he was there, he did marry Debbie, the girlfriend. They became husband and wife. And after serving almost 5 years, he was released on good behavior at the age of 24. Interesting side note, in 2007, the young boy David, Debbie's brother, and his other brother tried to sue Lorraine, saying that David had never been possessed at all, and that he was manipulated and exploited by the Warrens, and the author of the book, The Devil Would Maybe Do It, which was Gerard Brittle. He says they concocted the story in an attempt to get rich and famous at their expense, and that there is evidence to prove it. However, Arnie Johnson, to this day, stand by the demon story, along with his wife, Debbie, and Debbie and David's sister. Debbie did recently pass away and was involved with the marketing of the movie. In an interview recounting the exorcism and murders that are featured in the film, she is quoted as saying, "A newspaper came and I told them what happened." She says the day following the murder, he was possessed. So that's a little bit about the true story behind The Devil Made Me Do It. Why don't we talk a little bit about their famous occult museum? I know you've mentioned that a couple of times already here.
I'm more than happy to. It's located in Monroe, Connecticut. It's actually right now temporarily closed due to the fact of zoning violations. It is officially permanently closed due to zoning violations. It had been open since 1952. When the Warrens founded the New England Society for Psychic Research. It is an ever-expanding collection of knickknacks, artifacts, tokens, beautiful little things. Throughout their cases, the Warrens collected these trinkets and totems and doodads. They claimed that we were defiled by evil, locking in the museum to keep them safe from the public. The collection itself, which is eccentric, contains everything from alleged vampire coffins, child tombstones used as a satanic altar, death curses, demon masks, and psychic photographs lining the museums, accentuated by a Halloween's bounty of plastic props. However, not only can you see the mirror there, you can also see the cursed Raggedy Ann doll, which mostly famous is known as Annabelle. She sits in a glass case backlit by a haunting red light. Right now, the family of the Warrens are actually looking for a new location due to zoning issues, but right now they are saying the Warren Occult Museum in Monroe, Connecticut is closed.
I really hope they find a new place, because that's somewhere I think I would enjoy checking out. Maybe they can do something with Zach Bagans, because I know he has his haunted museum in Las Vegas. Maybe they can collaborate together and come up with something to do with the Warren's Occult Museum, so all that stuff doesn't, you know, just go forgotten. A little bit about their media appearances. Lorraine was featured in several episodes of Discovery series A Haunting, in which she discusses some of the cases that she has worked on, along with Ed. She was also on A Paranormal State, where she was a guest investigator. Ed and Lorraine both have appeared on Scariest Places on Earth. And she has a cameo appearance in the 2013 film The Conjuring, where she acts as a credited consultant. In 2012, she appeared in a documentary film called My Amityville Horror, where she was reunited with Daniel Lutz, whose family allegedly plagued by supernatural happenings in 75, where she originally visited the house with Ed after the Lutz's family fled from the house after 28 days of occupancy. Over the years, there have been several films and series that have been released based on their cases. As we mentioned before, there is the Conjuring series, the Amityville horror movies, and as I mentioned on the Smurl Haunting, there was a made-for-TV film called The Haunted, based on their haunting, and they also did in 2009 The Haunting of Connecticut. Also, their nephew, John Zaffis, is a demonologist, and he has also made several appearances on several TV series doing, you know, investigations and exorcisms as well. What else can we discuss about the Warrens?
Sadly, Ed and Lorraine are no longer with us, as I said before. Ed actually died, I believe, in 2006. Do you have the exact date?
August 23rd, 2006.
Right. And I believe Miss Warren,
she died April 18th, 2019.
Right. And knowing fully that they touched the lives of the paranormal world,
there was a lot of skepticism and controversy behind their cases as well. Not only was there the lawsuit from David Blatzkill, but there was claim that the Haunting of Connecticut was a hoax.
There's not really any video footage of said werewolf exorcism, nor is there any type of public documentations on that.
They were accused of having no credentials while investigating the Smurl Haunting, and there has been some questions in the authenticity of their Union Cemetery Lady in White video. And even, I know, with Amityville, there has been questions upon their investigation there.
Right. The Amityville Horror, I would love to discuss that in a future episode, because that controversy is the fact of some people believe that the Lutzes made it up and the Warrens were just along for the ride.
Mm-hmm. Yes. But despite all the criticism and accusations, Lorraine did test her psychic abilities, and the test did come out that it was true. She really was able to see and hear things. And they're still beloved figures in the paranormal community and by a lot of people. They are a couple of people that I wish I could have met before they passed. I had heard Lorraine in several interviews, and she just seemed like such a good, sweet, genuine person, full of love and light. So, I don't know. What are your final thoughts on Ed and Lorraine?
I believe that Ed and Lorraine did have a gift. I believe that they pretty much walked the walk and talked the talk. They really didn't make any money off of any of this thing that they were doing until years later when some person approached them about, you know, doing the Conjuring movies. Yes, they'd have public appearances or, you know, they would do lectures, but most of the time they were a small fee or voluntarily, you know, coming to do these lectures. So I don't think they were really looking for the big goal of money situation when it came to their cases. They were looking on helping these people. But that's just my thoughts. Your thoughts?
I agree. Like I said, when I've heard her in interviews, she seemed very genuine, very kind and caring. I do think that she was truly trying to help the people that they talked to. As I mentioned earlier, I do find it was very interesting how everything they came across was demonic, or, oh, you have a demon in your home, which sometimes I'm thinking, okay, maybe it was just Uncle Bob from down the block. But I don't think she had any ill will in her intentions. I think she really did go in there with the intention of helping the family who was suffering. And the only thing she wanted to do was put their minds at ease, her and Ed both. And as I said, their nephew, John Zaffis, continues to work with people to this day. And he speaks very highly of his aunt and uncle. He himself seems like a very wonderful, genuine person. Someone, again, I would love to meet if life permits. But yeah, that's my take on it all. Any final thoughts on the Warrens?
Again, like I said, when we're talking about Ed and Lorraine, we're not looking at people that are out there to make money. I think they were really interested in trying to help these people as well as satisfy their own curiosity. I've also loved the fact that both of them were very shy, unassuming. In fact, most of the time, if you've ever seen Ed and Lorraine talking in interviews, it was mostly Lorraine doing the talking while Ed kind of sat there, you know, very nervous and very uncomfortable in front of the spotlight.
Yes, he definitely seemed like he was the more reserved of the two, whereas she was definitely more charismatic and very open and outgoing. But I agree, I don't think that they were necessarily in it for the money, as some people claim.
Anyway, thoughts, questions? Pretty much our fans will be in control of this.
We'd love to hear our listeners' opinions. Join us in our Facebook group, The Skeptic Psychic. You can continue this discussion there. Do you have anybody that you'd like to recommend this week?
Why don't you guys send us recommendations? So that way we can actually take a look at them and see what exactly you guys feel like. Getting our fans active in our chat society, which is either you can go to our website, theskepticpsychic.com, or join us on our Facebook, Skeptic Psychic. Share your ideas on what the best podcast is that you like to hear more.
I would like to recommend one of my favorite comedians. She's absolutely hilarious. I love her because she's very clean in her comedy. And that's Miss Angela Johnson. She has on YouTube Ghost Stories with Angela Johnson. And they are recorded live. She has some great guests that come on and tell their stories as well as... in the comments, she shares the stories with her viewers. You can also listen to the podcast wherever podcasts are found. Check her out. If you haven't seen her comedy, check out her comedy skits on YouTube as well. She's really funny. And again, one of my favorite comedians. Also, we ask for our listeners to rate us and review us on Apple Podcasts or even Podchaser. You can review us as well.
I always like to recommend at the Apple Podcast 5 stars. 5 stars.
Yes, we will accept any rating, however, and we will read the reviews, even the bad ones, because we can learn from those. But we do ask that you do that for us. And if you'd like to share your stories or if there's anything that you want us to discuss, you can always email us at info@skepticpsychic.com. Or you can even check out our website, Skeptic Psychic, and send us a message from there. Next week, we have another great interview. We are interviewing a wonderful lady who had a near-death experience. Her name is Lindsay Jewell. And she's going to be talking to us about her spiritual awakening and her near-death experience. So we invite you all to listen in to that one as well. Anything else you'd like to add this week?
I do want to say that you guys have a great week. And remember that we love you. And we want you to remind everybody to stay safe and loving and unpleasant nightmares.
Sweet dreams, everybody. Good night.